Joining us now on the program, always a pleasure to bring this gentleman on, very gracious with his time, Congressman Gary Palmer of the 6th Congressional District of Alabama joins us. Congressman, how are you this morning?
I'm good. Busy morning.
Well, it's good to hear from you. Congressman, you know, we're talking about this a little bit earlier in the program. Pelosi, H.R. 1 is a prime example. Trying to federalize elections, it appears it is probably going nowhere in the Senate. But the game for the Democrats right now, it still seems to be we're fighting an election battle. We're still in this messaging bill mode, not really passing things. That even with a Democrat-controlled U.S. Senate, that have a chance. Do you get that sense from Pelosi and the other side?
I don't know, because H.R. 1 is subject to filibuster. I doubt seriously there are 10 Republicans that will vote for it. But it's another example of what we tried to warn people about, allowing the Democrats to get the majority in either house, is that they are trying to fundamentally transform America in one congressional session. If you look at this bill, it federalizes elections, and all of the things that caused so many problems in the 2020 election will now be legal. And the thing that exposes the hypocrisy probably more than anything else, there's two things that I want to point out here. One is that this bill allows the states to maintain inaccurate voter files. And I pointed out in my floor speech that the Pew Research Center reported there are 24 million improper registrations. 1.8 million of them are dead. The state of Michigan is 105% registered to vote. That means that they've got more people registered to vote than live in the state who are old enough or qualified to vote. Same thing Pennsylvania and other places. This is in direct violation of the 1993 National Voter Registration Act, which Democrats had control of both houses of Congress then. They passed that bill, Jeff. It's their law. And 17 of those Democrats who voted for that 1993 are still in the House. That includes Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer and Maxine Waters. And the second thing is as your listeners all know, they stripped Marjorie Taylor Greene of her committee assignments, and I think totally improperly. The people of her district have a right to elect whomever they want, and they stripped her of her committees. But in this bill, they include a provision that for every dollar that a candidate, an incumbent member of Congress raises, they will match it with $6. If she raises $1 million, they'll give her another $6 million. And the same Democrats, every one of them who voted to strip of her committees, co-sponsored the bill that would give her $6 million.
This is all done in the name of making elections more fair, that are taking away some of the undue influences of politics or special interests. Like what could possibly be the motivation?
They're creating a ruling class. You know, they like to claim they want to attack the wealthy and the elites. And they think of themselves as the elites, Jeff. They think they're smarter than the average voter. They look at people like us as deplorables. I mean, they are creating a permanent ruling class. And I just think people need to know what's really happening with this bill. And like I say, I can't imagine that there are 10 senators, Republican senators, who will support this.
Well, typically when you do something big like this, it's done gradually. But as you mentioned, it seems to be the Democrats in the House want to change things fundamentally, very radically in these 2 years. Are they just not even interested about the 2022 and what repercussions might come from some of this stuff, that they recognize that they're probably going to lose the majority, so grab what you can on the way out? That seems to be something to go to. We're way early in this Congress to be going to that route.
I think they believe that they can win the majority back. I think one of the things that they've done, you know, the $600 a week extra on the unemployment that, benefits that they pushed through last year, that's $15 an hour on a 40-hour work week. Does that sound familiar? That's your $15 an hour minimum wage. The other thing that AOC and that far left crowd has been pushing for is a guaranteed minimum income. This stimulus bill is going to send a check for $1,400 to pretty much just about everybody in the country except the mega wealthy or the very wealthy. There are 10 senators, Democrat senators, have already sent a letter to start the process on the next round of checks. This is how they will build up a base that depends on them for a guaranteed minimum income. And we're headed for a fiscal disaster. I've been warning people about inflation that's coming, and sending checks is inflationary. I understand that we need to help the people who lost their jobs because the government forced their company to shut down. I understand needing to help people who lost income because they couldn't work a normal work week. I get all that, but you combine this with the other things that the Biden administration is doing, like a moratorium on fracking on federal land, shutting down the Keystone Pipeline. That's going to have a very negative impact on the cost of energy. It's going to go up, and energy impacts everything that you will use today, Jeff. From the time you got out of the bed, which has an energy cost, from the manufacturing, the raw materials, to what you ate for breakfast, to driving in to work, to the equipment you're using right now. All of that has an energy cost, and it will get passed on to the consumer. And for a lot of low-income people, in terms of their household heating and cooling costs, it's really going to be hard.
Congressman, do you get the sense, though, you mentioned Joe Biden and some of these executive orders. He's not really the one, it doesn't seem, but, you know, that's typically those first 100 days for a new administration are very, very big, very pivotal. You get a lot of, you know, a lot of push, or a lot of advocacy for the agenda. But you know, what we've seen so far, and I know we're, you know, just a month or so in and some change into his term, not seeing a lot of Biden. He doesn't appear to me that he's the guy driving this train, that it continues to be Speaker Pelosi.
I think that there's some truth to that. I don't know that it's totally the case, but I think there's some truth to that. I think what this shows is that Biden lied to the American people about being a moderate. He's not. I can only imagine if he is a moderate, there must be a reason. Somebody must be holding something over his head to force him to do some of the things that he's doing, take the actions that he's taking. And I'm very concerned about what's going on in the Middle East and with Iran, that they are clearly testing his resolve. And, you know, under President Trump, we de-escalated that. We were on path to historic agreements. We already have historic agreements between Israel and some of the Arab nations. And I'm very concerned that he's going to have a very feckless, reckless foreign policy that's going to cause us a lot of problems. And the fact that, you know, it may have been militia that fired those rockets at our Air Force base yesterday. They're clearly backed by Iran.
Well, in addition to what's going on in the Middle East, the China situation, always, you know, when we came out of COVID, or when we got into COVID, I should say, and we realized, you know, wow, this is going to have a very, very big impact. There's a lot of talk about confronting the Chinese on this, trying to move some of U.S. manufacturing back, our U.S. companies that have manufacturing facilities back here domestically, you know, getting unentangled from anything there in China. And I don't know if that's kind of going on behind the scenes, but from a policy standpoint and what's going on in Washington, D.C., Does that seem like there's anything that is adding to that?
There is an effort that the Biden administration has launched to form alliances with what they call the Big Seven. It may wind up being the Big Ten nations. So these are predominantly European nations plus India and Australia to collaborate in the procurement, refinement, and manufacture of products from things like, say, rare earth metals. But really, the strength of this coalition, if they can pull it together, will be on parts that China needs, technology that China doesn't have. And I don't know. I think under the Trump administration, there was a strength of resolve there that all of these nations recognized with Trump that I'm not sure they see with Biden. And it'll be interesting to see if they're able to pull this together. And which I think if they do that, we would be able to get at least some short-term concessions from China. I don't know what China will do long-term. I'm sure that they'll figure out a way to steal the technology themselves and produce it themselves. But at least the Biden administration is making an attempt in that area.
Joined by Congressman Gary Palmer of the 6th Congressional District of Alabama. Congressman, the big CPAC event was last weekend. Alabama, the Republicans had their meeting on Saturday. We were supposedly, the media told us that the Republicans were having a civil war. But as far as I could tell, just based on my anecdotal experiences and talking to people, it doesn't seem to be a civil war underway. There does seem to be an opposition to a lot of the cancel culture and what Democrats are trying to do. But folks still seem to be kind of gravitating toward Trump or Trump's agenda or something of that sort. Where do you think the Republican Party is right now?
Well, we're always going to be a party that allows for differences of opinion, disagreements, unlike the Democrats, that you're in lockstep or you're out. But we will have our discussions, we will have our disagreements and differences of opinion, but at the end of the day, Jeff, I think we're going to come together because we know what's at stake. I'm not interested in anyone's personal political ambitions, mine included. This is not the time for that. We have got to be focused on what's best for the country because, as we've been discussing for the last few minutes, we're clearly not only heading in the wrong direction, we're heading in a dangerous direction. And the opportunity to stop that and to really stop the Biden agenda is November of 2022. And I just want to remind your listeners, because I've had so many people tell me that they think it's all over, we'll never be the majority again, never elect another Republican president. The same conversations were being had after the 2008 election. And I went out to a meeting in Des Moines, Iowa, a few weeks after that election, and we got focused on taking back the House. But we also got focused on state legislative races. And I would encourage your listeners to take heart because, as I told one person who was telling me this, I said, well, name me one significant accomplishment of the Obama administration in his last 6 years in office. And I said, take as long as you need. I was driving, so I had plenty of time. And the response was, I can't think of anything. I said, you know why? And the response was, you got the majority back. That's exactly right, Jeff. We need to have our discussions and differences of opinion, but at the end of the day, we're going to come together, get the majority back, and shut them down. And we need to be thinking the same way about the governors around the country and the legislatures. We have 28 states that have Republican majorities in both houses as the aftermath of the 2008 election. Pretty much all that happened in 2010. For the first time in years, Republicans outnumber Democrats in terms of governorships after the 2010 election. So we need to get focused. We need to be willing to do what we can to help. All of your listeners need to be willing to support candidates financially, to get out, knock on doors, make phone calls, that if we'll get our act together, we can get the majority back and we can stop this.
And we'll wrap it up on this. Just really looking at, you know, where the disagreements, if there are, well, whatever they are in the Republican Party, they don't seem to me to be necessarily a policy. That Republicans tend to agree a lot on these big overarching policy ideas. It's where it's the personality issue. You know, who you like, who you don't. But if you get past that, we as Republicans or conservatives seem to be on the same page on a lot of these ideas.
Well, Jeff, for years the Republicans were, the perception was that we were the party of corporate America and big business and all that. And as your listeners probably are well aware, and I know you are, corporate America has left us. They're no longer corporate America. They're international corporations. Even gone so far as to tell us that they're not going to support Republican candidates. That's fine. The Republican Party is the party of the American people, of the working people, of the people that Pelosi and Hillary Clinton and Biden view as deplorables. We're the party of rebuilding the country. And I think that's got to be the message that we get out there and rally the people to that. That's exactly what President Trump did. He understood that fundamentally, that the working class Americans were ignored and even disrespected. And he spoke up for them. And that's what you're going to see from us in the policies that we push, is we're speaking for the average, everyday working mom and dad trying to raise a family, trying to live the life the best way they can kind of people.
Congressman, we got to leave it there. We're out of time. But as always, thanks for coming on and talking to our audience down here in Southwest Alabama.
Happy to do it, Jeff. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. That was Congressman Gary Palmer.